Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Right now, I'm pleased once again to welcome the Secretary of Public Safety, Brian Moran. I beat this to death, but he is one of the last Democrats who was willing to come on WRVA on a regular basis. He's in Governor Northam's cabinet, so the governor hadn't told him, hey, what in the heck are you doing going on WRVA? So I do appreciate the fact that Brian Moran is willing to come on. And I've got to pick this up, Mr. Secretary, with the IG report. I was listening to Jeff's show yesterday, Jeff Katz, in the afternoon, and in the middle of the show, apparently he got an unredacted copy of the IG report that you and I talked about last week, and it seems like it's pretty damning. What's your reaction to this?
Good. Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
And, yeah, we did discuss this last week, and we were trying to figure out a way to get the full report out, because we certainly don't want to hide anything. And I'll tell you, in response to your question, I'm still trying to reconcile the OSIG report, which I respect. They, you know, they work with many of our agencies. Enjoy working with Mr. Westfall. I'm a difficult time reconciling their report and the Virginia Parole Board's response, which hopefully folks have gotten as well.
Now, that I have not read, to be honest with you. So,
yeah. Well,
did that come out last night?
Well, they released it to the legislators who released the OSIG report, despite being told not to release the OSIG report. It took them all of about 5 minutes to release it and have a press conference, which is a bit ironic, since they're screaming for the parole board's resignation for violating procedures, and then they go ahead and take about 5 minutes to violate procedures. But,
well, procedures versus violating law, I mean, there is a difference, right?
OSIG, you're not supposed to, but John, I'll let
okay,
their hypocrisy settle. I'll let them have to struggle with that themselves. But that's the bigger issue, is we have an OSIG report that says there are violations. And we take this very seriously, as we have since the beginning, when this rose, you know, came to our attention back in March, when the parole release of Mr. Martin came to our attention, and the parole board's actions with respect to Mr. Martin's release. And but the parole board's response in the OSIG investigation, let me just tell you two of the findings they made.
Okay.
These three findings. One of which is notice. Was the local prosecutor, in this case, the Commonwealth's attorney in Richmond, because that's where he was convicted, was she notified within 21 days? So you read the parole board's response, and they said initially it was 15 days was given. Now, parole board doesn't set the release date. That's Department of Corrections. So it was 15 days when Tanya Chapman, the new parole board chair, took her position. She realized that the 21-day rule would not be met, and so she contacted DOC and set the release date to May 10th, and then, which is beyond the 21 days. And then when May 10th arose, the OSIG said they were going to investigate, so we asked the parole board to further suspend his release until June 10th for another 30 days. So that is not in the OSIG report. He didn't get out until June 10th, not early April. And so the 21 days was remedied.
That's but not wasn't that because report. People so raised hell about it? It wasn't because the board was that concerned about following the procedure. It was because people like Jeff and the law enforcement community raised hell with you and others and said, what are you doing here, right?
Well, certainly the second 30-day was when OSIG said they've gotten all these anonymous complaints over their hotline, and so we're going to investigate. And we said, well, since there's a cloud of investigation here, we should continue it. The initial one, Tanya Chapman will tell you that it was 21, she realized 21 days wasn't being met, and so she continued it. But again, none of that's in the report. And so it makes it look like he was released in April in violation of 21 days. It wasn't. Whatever the local Commonwealth's attorney wanted to do in response to the release, she had more than adequate time to do. She had well over 2 months to do, not just 21 days. So, again, none of that is in the report. So, okay, what do I do with that? And of course, Tanya, we have a new board chair, and she's the one that pushed it beyond 21 days. And certainly she has been instructed that the 21-day rule is extremely important to us and to follow strictly. Now, another complaint or finding in the OSIG report is the meeting that the chair of the pro board has with the family. Now, it was not in person, and I wish it was in person. John, I'm old school. I like meetings in person. You know, Zoom calls and WebEx, it is what it is, though. We got to do it, right?
Well, especially when it's the family of a dead police officer. Right? That,
correct.
That kind of ups the ante, I think, or the symbolism, the emotions.
Couldn't agree more, because I think personal, the emotions of it are better expressed, certainly in person, than it would be over some other medium. So, but the chair, and it was the chair, not just any board member, but the chair does meet with the family, but it is not in person. Now, so, you know, none of the context of that is not in the report. Now, this is late March. The family's from New York. We know what was happening in New York at that time with respect to COVID. We know at that time that there's a stay-at-home order. People are being told to telework. Nobody's meeting in person in late March. Mm-hmm. None of that context is in the report. Now, so she did meet with them, though, talked to them, obtained their input. Obviously, they opposed parole. That was shared with the rest of the parole board members. They had that information when they made the decision to parole them. So,
but again, not to interrupt you, but if I'm reading this correctly and my understanding from what I've heard other people discussing it, including on Jeff's show, is that there was a reluctance to actually engage with the family, and there was an initial, we can't track them down, so we're going to let this part slide. Am I mistaken about that? Is that allegation not correct?
I think it is an allegation, which we need to get to the bottom of. I think you read the report, certainly you were left with that impression.
Okay.
But is it fair? I mean, there's also some comments in the report that are attributed to Adrian Bennett with no attribution. Who is claiming she said that? They put it in quotes. There's no transcript. I mean, it's pure hearsay. Now, I'm a lawyer. I would love to get somebody on the stand and ask, wait a minute, what was the demeanor in which she said these quotes? I suspect anybody talking to a victim's family, it is difficult to do. Particularly in a case of this magnitude and tragedy. So I don't know what Adrian Bennett said, and there's no transcript, but they include quotes from her and then don't attribute who gave us these. I mean, it's just, that's troubling to me, because now Adrian Bennett, it's really unfair, because Adrian is now on the bench. She's a judge, and she can't comment to dispute those quotes that are attributed to her. So that's a little...
So what do you do now? Do you go back and research that? Do you ask?
Yep.
Do you send an addendum that says, "Here are my questions for the Inspector General. Can you answer this and clarify it, and then give Judge Bennett an opportunity to respond?" I mean, what is the process?
Yeah. Well,
it's not good. You got to concede this is not a good report.
Well, you take this seriously. You know, no question. I mean, we don't want. You know, the fact is, of course, none of this is reflecting on Mr. Martin. The decision itself, the merits of the decision are one we could debate philosophically, whether or not somebody who serves 40 years has no infractions should ever be released.
Or whether somebody who kills a police officer should never be released. I'm not, I mean, to me, it doesn't matter how nice he is once he gets to prison. There are things that you do that, you know, game over. Sorry, you're lucky we didn't put a bullet in your head or electrocute you, but okay.
Yeah, and he was originally sentenced to execution, appeal, it got overturned. So that's the argument. But again, this has nothing to do with that actual merits. Mm-hmm. They made that decision, whether you agree with it or not. But now we got all this administrative issues and procedural issues that we need to get to the bottom of, because we don't want this to repeat itself. And trust me, certainly Tonya Chapman, the new chair Barol, former police chief, police officer for 30 years, she's well aware of that. The rest of the board is well aware of that. Their response, they don't believe they violated in the first place. So we need to get to the bottom of that. And that's
I need to read that response. I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't have that in front of me. So I do want to read that, because I want to be fair to everybody. What do you think the timetable is here?
We're working on it immediately. I mean, there's a couple other things in that report about there was a meeting and whether or not, it makes it sound as though the family was sitting on the phone waiting for Adrian Bennett, and Adrian Bennett didn't schedule the call. And I find that hard to believe. Knowing Adrian, she's very conscientious. There's some things in that report I really want to get to the bottom of.
They're concerning, and so I'm glad that you want to get to the bottom of it. I mean, it'd be easy to try to sweep this under the rug, and I appreciate the fact that you're willing to come on and talk about it and pursue it. So, again, I'll probably bring it up again next week if you're still willing to come on, and I appreciate you being willing to talk through it.
You know, I haven't shied away from your program.
You have not.
I don't have any problem coming on and explaining it, but I the parole board, two strong lawyers on there. One of them is now on the bench. The other one, a long legal career, part of it was as a prosecutor serving the attorney general's office. The other three members are very conscientious. They've been on a long time. Two of them have been on a long time. So we have faith in the parole board. This OSIG report, obviously. Is troubling, and we're taking it very seriously.
Okay.
And I will try to reconcile the two stories, because they're diametrically different.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll let you get back to doing that, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Friday. Brian Moran.
When are we going to talk about defund the police?
I know. I keep pushing it off, and it's a big campaign issue. But you know what I'm doing? Not this week, but next week, I'm going to the convention in Milwaukee, it seems like Joe Biden's not going to his own convention, but my intention is to be there, so we'll have to talk about defund the police.
You might be the only one there. I've been to conventions in the past, certainly not going this year. I have a lot going on with COVID and other
issues, though. I'm not scared of this stuff. That's the thing. Now, if I drop dead when I get back, then you all can have a laugh.
We're not encouraging people to be scared. We're encouraging them to just take the necessary precautions, and we'll win if everybody takes the necessary precautions.
I'll be careful. Hey, Brian Moran, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, John.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.